6.
"You missed quite a match," said Rye. Stassi and Elsor had vanished, and the stadium began to empty. The first round was over. 36 had become 18, and tomorrow 18 would become 9.
"Sorry," said Kel. "It's been a busy day."
Rye swung his arm around his brother's shoulders, then winced.
"Did you have to let that last blow through?"
he whispered beneath the sounds of the crowd. Kel shrugged.
"I wanted to give the people a show."
But he was smiling.
"You better put that grin away," chided Rye. "If anyone sees you beaming like that, they'll think you've gone mad."
Kel tried to wrestle his features into their usual stern order and lost. He couldn't help it. The last time he'd felt this alive, someone was trying to kill him. His body ached in a dozen different places. He'd lost 6 plates to the Ferrowin's 10. It was far harder than he'd thought it would be, using only one element. Normally, he let the lines between them blur, drawing on whichever he needed, knowing he could reach for any, and they would answer. In the end, it had taken half Kel's focus not to break the rules. But he'd done it. Rye's arm fell away, and he nodded at the arena floor where the Arnesian had been.
"That one might give the others a run for their money. I thought the odds were in Alucard's favor." "Oh, they still are. But this one's something. You should see his next match, if you can find the time." "I'll check my schedule."
A man cleared his throat.
"Your Highness, Master Kel."
It was Rye's guard, Tolners. He led their escort out of the stadium, and Stoff fell in step behind them on the way to the palace. It had only been hours since Kel left, but he felt like a different man. The walls weren't as suffocating, and even the looks didn't bother him as much. It had felt so good to fight. The exhilaration was paired with a strange relief, a loosening in his limbs and chest, like a craving sated. For the first time in months, he was able to stretch his power. Not all the way, of course. And every moment, he was constantly aware of the need for discretion, disguise. But it was something. Something he'd desperately needed.
"You're coming tonight, of course," said Rye as they climbed the stairs to the royal hall. "To the ball?"
"Another one?" complained Kel.
"Doesn't it get tiresome?"
"The politics are exhausting, but the company can be pleasant, and I can't hide you from Cora forever."
"Talk of exhausting," muttered Kel as they reached their hall. He stopped at his room while Rye continued toward the doors with the gold inlaid R at the end.
"The sacrifices we make," Rye called back.
Kel rolled his eyes as the prince disappeared. He brought his hand to his own door and paused. A bruise was coming out against his wrist, and he could feel the other places he'd been hit coloring beneath his clothes. He couldn't wait for tomorrow's match. He pushed open the door, and he was already shrugging out of his coat when he saw the king standing at his balcony doors, looking out through the frosted glass. Kel's spirits sank.
"Sir,"
he said gingerly.
"Kel,"
said the king in way of greeting. His attention went to Stoff, who stood in the doorway.
"Please wait outside."
And then to Kel.
"Sit."
Kel lowered himself onto a sofa, his bruises suddenly feeling less like victories and more like traitors.
"Is something wrong?"
asked Kel when they were alone.
"No,"
said the king.
"But I've been thinking about what you said this morning."
This morning? This morning was years away.
"About what, sir?"
"About your proximity to Rye during the Essentage. With so many foreigners flooding the city, I'd prefer if you kept to the palace."
Kel's chest tightened.
"Have I done something wrong? Am I being punished?"
King Maxim shook his head.
"I'm not doing this to punish you. I'm doing it to protect Rye."
"Your Majesty, I'm the one who protects Rye.
If anything were to..." "But Rye doesn't need your protection,"
cut in the king.
"Not anymore. The only way to keep him safe is to keep you safe."
Kel's mouth went dry.
"Come, Kel," continued the king. You can't care that much. I haven't seen you at the tournament all day.
Kell shook his head. That's not the point. This isn't...
The central arena is visible from the palace balconies. You can watch the tournament from here.
The king set a golden ring the size of his palm on the table.
You can even listen to it.
Kell opened his mouth, but the protests died on his tongue. He swallowed and clenched his hands.
Very well, sir,
he said, pushing to his feet.
Am I banished from the balls, too?
No, said the king, ignoring the edge in Kell's voice. We keep track of all those who come and go. I see no reason to keep you from those, so long as you are careful. Besides, we wouldn't want our guests to wonder where you were.
Of course, murmured Kell.
As soon as the king was gone, Kell crossed into the small room off the main chamber and shut the door. Candles came to life on the shelf walls, and by their light he could see the back of the door, its wood marked by a dozen symbols, each a portal to another place in London. It would be so easy to go. They could not keep him. Kell drew his knife and cut a shallow line against his arm. When the blood welled, he touched his fingers to the cut, but instead of tracing an existing symbol, he drew a fresh mark on a bare stretch of wood. A vertical bar with two horizontal accents, one on top leading right, one on bottom leading left. The same symbol he'd made in Kamarov's tent that morning. Kell had no intention of missing the tournament. But if a lie would ease the king's mind, so be it. As far as breaking the king's trust, it didn't matter. The king hadn't trusted him in months. Kell smiled grimly at the door and went to join his brother.